Harihi Om Sahanavavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastomavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila chapter 6, then we're reading from this Srila Prabhupada's in his purport, then he's referring back to the Adi Lila 7th chapter, verses 106 to 146. Because if you remember in the Adi Lila, when he opens, he gave all the essence of all these important conversations right there. So then he's already explained fine details with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Also, we see Prakashananda Saraswati. Then, when it comes along, then you get into the conversation here in the Madhyalila, like we are now. But this is just bringing in those things that may not be already covered here. I mean, yeah, covered here that were covered before. So, page 142. According to Shankaracharya, by accepting the theory of the transformation of the energy of the Lord, one creates an illusion by indirectly accepting that the absolute truth is transformed, because they can't understand how he can be one and be different. So because of that, they're unable to appreciate and understand the philosophy properly. So that's going to be a big problem for them. So because of that covering, because of that illusion, then the straightforward elements that are there can't be understood, because they want it to fit into their logic. That's their claim to fame. They're logicians, they know the grammar, and so they have to know it by that method. So in one sense, they're no different from the materialist. He has to see it with the senses, or the scientist that must be able to record it with their senses or their instruments, and otherwise it doesn't exist. So that's their weakness. So that's why then they're looking at all these things then to make fit into the logic. It's the transformation of the mode of goodness, and so that's all that they actually deal with. So they say we're dealing with liberation and transcendence, but they're not. They're only dealing with the transformation of goodness, because they can't understand the Lord, who's beyond the ability of the intelligence and the senses. And because of that, then they will never understand. It's that simple. Sad, but true. Transformation of energy is a proven fact. It is the false bodily conception of the self that is an illusion, right? So they're worried about illusion, right? Because they're Mayavadis, so they talk about Maya all the time. And so they're worried about that. But it's the identifying with the transformation of the energy, that's the illusion, because we're not that transformation. We are the soul. So if they accept that the energy around is transforming, but still we remain the soul, and if we understand like that, we'll be beyond, and the Lord is beyond, then it works out. Everything falls into place. Everything becomes reconciled. All the different statements in the scripture become, appreciated and understood. But it's not based on logic, so that's the difficulty. They're mundane logic, so that's why they are not interested, right? Because remember, before we had the term miyate ananya, means the way that you measure something, how you measure. So they can only measure through their logic and word jugglery. So they cannot appreciate something that is the descending knowledge that the Lord reveals. It just doesn't work for them. So if you're going to insist on measuring with your mundane intelligence, you can only understand what Krishna reveals within mundane intelligence. And that's not his transcendental position. They can understand that there's eternity. They can understand that there is unchangingness, and to a minor degree. So compared to the material world, it seems very great, but it's not very special at all compared to the spiritual. Just like on the material platform in the realm of karma, something's done very well and very properly, then the experience one gets from it compared to other experiences, or regular day-to-day experiences in the material world, will consider it very special. And so that's within here, within here where we're doing. It's just like if everybody's down at the garbage dump and picking through that to find things to, wear, and shoes and something to eat in that. So then, if you get, find a pair of pants that don't have, rips, the whole leg's ripped off, it's just got a hole in it. Then you think, wow, this is fabulous, but it's still all garbage. So it's within the context of the material world, it appears to be great. And then their context of what can be revealed through the material intelligence also appears to be very great, because it's coming from Krishna. You follow the rules, it is great. But compared to what is the actual position, the unlimited position of this, of Ananda, that is Krishna himself, that they will never get close to. Not at all. Nothing. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is opulent in all respects. Therefore, by his inconceivable energies, he has transformed the material cause of manifestation. Using the example of a touchstone, which by its energy turns iron to gold, and yet remains the same, we can understand that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead transforms his innumerable energies, he remains unchanged, right? Because he's expanding, his energies are transforming. So the point is what is his nature is the nature you'll see in everything else. It'll be reflective of his energy, so it'll be reflective of him. So some positions are there that have very similar, a concept like him, like this thing, the touchstone. It can transform something and it itself remain unchanged. So in the same way, Krishna can transform his energy, he remains unchanged. So that's why examples are given, so we can start to relate. So he's beyond, he's the source of the touchstone. Although a touchstone produces many varieties of valuable jewels, it nevertheless remains the same. It does not change its original form. If there is inconceivable potency in material objects, why should we not believe in the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Right? If material things, we see so much amazing elements, why wouldn't Krishna, who is the source of all this, why wouldn't he be special? The Vedic sound vibration Omkara, the principal word in the Vedic literatures, is the basis of all Vedic vibrations. Therefore, one should accept Omkara as the sound representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the reservoir of the cosmic manifestation. It is the purpose of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to present Pranava, Omkara, as the reservoir of all Vedic knowledge. The words Tattvamasi are only a partial explanation of the Vedic knowledge. Because you say, I am that, so you're saying that I am the Brahman, so I am spiritual. But that's only dealing with the Sat part of that, because they don't actually understand knowledge, because ultimately they say all the knowledge and words they use is also illusion. But through that illusion, they're supposed to come to the transcendental platform. But somehow or another, they can't apply that in anything else. So there's a problem there. So Omkara includes everything, Sat, Chit, and Ananda, and the pastimes of the Lord, the Holy Dhamma of the Lord. Everything that we've discussed, in the Sandarbha, all that's included in Omkara. So their Tattvamasi is only giving part of that. You're taking that angle like that. Pranava Omkara is the Mahavakya, Mahamantra in the Vedas. Shankaracharya's followers cover this to stress without authority the mantra Tattvamasi. Just because It's about them being I am that rather than what that is. They don't know what is that. And so they don't understand how they fit into that. So because they don't want to be part of that, they want to be that. So then, yeah, they have to pick something else. In all the Vedic sutras and literatures, it is Lord Krishna who is to be understood. But the followers of Shankara have covered, hidden the real meaning of the Vedas with indirect explanations. The self-evident Vedic literatures are the highest evidence of all. But if these literatures are interpreted, their self-evident nature is lost. To prove their philosophy, the members of the Mayavadi school have given up the real, easily understood meaning of the Vedic literature and introduced indirect meanings based on their imaginative powers. Right? So Lord Chaitanya is explaining all this. So that's the whole point, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was explaining that the Abhida Shakti is the direct meaning of something. The word is there and it has what it means. You know, you have the dictionaries, you have the grammar, you have the usages and all that. But they want to use the Lakshana, they want to use an indirect because they want to get another meaning. And so as soon as you start doing that, the direct meaning is lost. It's not there anymore. So they replace the very straightforward, easy, understandable aspect of Krishna as the Supreme Lord and how everything's connected to him, and give that up for these interpreted things that please their intellect, that pleases, you know, keeps them busy, and it keeps them, gives them the idea that I am very special because Tattva Masi, because I am that, you know, I am Brahma. And so that's what they want. So they're happy to put aside the direct meaning and take an illusory meaning because it fits their false ego. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thus showed for each and every sutra the defects in Shankara's explanations, all the assembled Mayavadi sannyasis were struck with wonder. All the Mayavadi sannyasis said, "Your Holiness, kindly know from us that we actually have no quarrel with your refutation of these meanings. You have given a clear understanding of the sutras. We know that all this word jugglery springs from the imagination of Shankaracharya. And yet, because we belong to the sect, we accept it, though it does not satisfy us. Now let us see," the Mayavadi sannyasi continued, "how well you can describe the sutras in terms of their direct meaning." Right? Because right now, as we see, is how intelligent all these individuals are. It means they are scholars in that. You know, so they'll have that aspect of the weakness for knowing the absolute, but it doesn't mean that they don't appreciate the scholarly position. So then they've said, okay, you've defeated, you know, this whole aspect of approaching it from the indirect. And because of that, then, you know, how it's being dealt. And so they accept that. And they're saying, you know, yes, Shankaracharya said, you interpret like this. That's all he's ever saying. Interpret like this. You know, like I give an example like this, you interpret. So they know that it's come from that, and they're not satisfied, but, you know, they're in that line and they're accepting and they're trying to get that taste that they're, you know, expecting to get. But now that that's been discussed, then now they're saying, you know, very intelligently, so now please tell us how well you can describe the direct meaning. He said, the indirect is useless. It's a direct, and they've accepted that. Now, okay, please present the direct. Hearing this, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his direct explanation of the Vedanta Sutra. Quote, "Brahman, who is greater than the greatest, is the supreme personality of Godhead," right? Because Brahman means the greatest. And so he's greater than the greatest. So Brahman is greater than, means Brahman is greater than the greatest of this world, but Krishna as a person is greater than that greatest, what's greater than whatever's great here. Right? "He is full in six opulences and therefore is the reservoir of ultimate truth and absolute knowledge." Right? So he has the six opulences. He's the source of that ultimate truth, absolute knowledge. Then you are going to see is then he's also the ocean of bliss. "In his original form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full with transcendental opulences, which are free from the contamination of the material world. It is to be understood that in all the Vedic literature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal. When we speak of the Supreme as impersonal, nirvishesha, we deny his spiritual potencies. Logically, if you accept half the truth, you cannot understand the whole. Right? So we've given up that he can't have any qualities. You could just from that, you could only partially understand anyway. Right? So that's it's just natural. It's pretty straightforward. It is only by devotional service, beginning with hearing, that one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the only means to approach him, because intelligence is not. He's beyond. He's the source of intelligence. By practicing this regulated devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, certainly one awakens his dormant love of Godhead. This process is called abhideya, right? So abhida means the direct meaning. Abhideya means applying that direct meaning in your life. So when we say abhideya, it means it's not sentimental, because sometimes people say, oh, it's just sentiment. But no, it's abhideya. You're applying the knowledge. You've heard the knowledge. You understand it. You apply it. That's abhideya. So you have that faith. Vishwasa. Or you can say, oh, it's just faith. It's just sentiment. But they everybody can.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj, we didn't. Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
You did. Yes. Yes.
We're not hearing you right now. No, you're frozen. I'm going to just switch off some cameras.
Again. There was people frozen.
Okay, it's back now.
Yeah, any better?
Yes, Marge.
Now we're back. Okay, so what did you hear? Oh, it's this there.
No, still. I'm going to switch off your camera as well, Marge.
Okay.
You try now, Marge?
Okay, so now is it working?
Yes, Marge. This sounds much better.
Now we're getting something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So yeah, so then this the idea then you're applying the process of the direct meaning of the words. So the scripture is saying how Krishna is the absolute truth, we're his servant, and so then we should apply ourselves in devotional service. So applying that knowledge all began. So you hear the knowledge, that's the sambandha jnana. When you apply it practically, that's called abhideya. And then the result then is pleasing Krishna and developing love for Krishna, right? So the abhideya that you're doing things to please Krishna, the result is not that you get a new Mercedes Benz or something like that. No, it means that you're going to get if one develops love and becomes attached to the lotus Krishna, gradually he loses his attachment to everything else, right? So they're trying separately to become detached. But it's very easy. You become attached to Krishna, you become detached from the material energy. Love of Godhead is so exalted that it's considered to be the fifth goal of human life, right? So it's the ultimate goal. That's what you must see, is all other goals have to be seen in context of developing love for Krishna. Then it becomes a proper goal, otherwise it becomes a distraction. By awakening one's love of Godhead, one can attain the platform of conjugal love, tasting it even during the present span of life. So if one awakens that, so one can also, within this body, come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform and be able to perform devotional service within the spiritual world, and one can taste that element. So it's not limited by the time and space. The Supreme Lord, who is greater than the greatest, becomes submissive to even a single, even to a very insignificant devotee because of his devotional service. It is the beautiful and exalted nature of devotional service that the infinite Lord becomes submissive to the infinitesimal living entity because of it. In reciprocal devotional activities with the Lord, The devotee actually enjoys the transcendental mellow of devotional service. One's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sambandha, activities in terms of that relationship, Abhideya, right? So we've heard Sambandha, we've heard that knowledge. So activities in terms of that relationship. So that means understanding Sambandha, what the actual direct meaning, the Abhida, right? Then you apply that, that's Abhideya. And the ultimate goal of life to develop love for Godhead, Prayojana. These three subjects are explained in every aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra. Okay, one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sambandha. Activities in terms of that relationship, Abhideya. Right, so Prabhupada's pointing out here, activities in terms of that relationship. Or Lord Chaitanya is making this point. In other words, that's Abhideya. So Sambandha is the understanding it properly, that's the Abhida. A direct understanding, and then applying that—that's Abhideya, and the ultimate goal of life to develop love of God, Prayojana. Right? These three subjects are explained in every aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra, but they form the culmination of the entire Vedanta philosophy. So, understanding Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, and then applying that in your life and gaining that result of developing love for Krishna—that's the whole purpose of Vedanta. And Vedanta is the essence of the philosophy of the Veda. So in other words, that is the essential point. So it's not just a technical way of doing it. It is the way of looking at it. That's the principle. So now verse 26, 132 through 133. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "You, Sarvabhama Bhattacharya, you do not explain the direct meaning of the Brahma Sutras. Indeed, it appears that your business is to cover their real meaning." Right? So like Shankaracharya, he covers the meaning. So you've explained, been talking for 7 days. I haven't understood everything because you're covering everything. Let's say we're talking about a mango, and you're talking about, you know, you have to make sure that every, you know, 500 miles, you know, you check the tires and check the air. You know, what's that got to do with a mango? Yeah. The Vedanta Sutra is the summary of all the Upanishads. Therefore, whatever direct meaning is there in the Upanishads is also recorded in the Vedanta Sutra or Vyasa Sutra. So there's not something else. Whatever is in the Veda, that's recorded in the Upanishads, you know, the philosophical. Whatever is all the philosophical points in the Upanishads, that's all covered in the Vedanta Sutra. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has explained the word Upanishad in his Anubhashya. Please refer to Adi Lila 2nd chapter 5th verse and Adi Lila 7th chapter verses 106 and 108 for his explanation given below. Okay, so this is from the 5th verse. Adi 2.5. What the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman is but the effulgence of his body. And the Lord known as the Supersoul is but his localized plenary portion. Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. Full with six opulences, he is the absolute truth, and no other truth is greater than or equal to him. Purport. The compilers of the Upanishads speak very highly of the impersonal Brahman. The Upanishads, which are considered the most elevated portion of the Vedic literatures, are meant for persons who desire to get free from material association and who therefore approach a bona fide spiritual master for enlightenment. The prefix Upa indicates that one must receive knowledge about the absolute truth from a spiritual master. One who has faith in a spiritual master actually receives transcendental instruction. And as his attachment from material life slackens, he is able to advance on the spiritual path. Knowledge of the transcendental science of the Upanishads can free one from the entanglement of existence in the material world. And when thus liberated, one can be elevated to the spiritual kingdom of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by advancement in spiritual life. The beginning of spiritual enlightenment is realization of impersonal Brahman. Such realization is affected by gradual negation of material variegatedness. Impersonal Brahman realization is the partial, distant experience of the absolute truth that one achieves through the rational approach. It is compared to one seeing a hill from a distance and taking it to be a smoky cloud. A hill is not a smoky cloud, but it appears to be one from a distance because of our imperfect vision. In perfect or smoky realization of the absolute truth, spiritual variegatedness is conspicuous by its absence. This experience is therefore called Advaitavad, or realization of the oneness of the absolute. The impersonal glowing effulgence of Brahman consists only of the personal bodily rays of the Supreme Godhead, Sri Krishna. Sri Gaurasundara, or Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is identical with Krishna himself. The Brahman effulgence consists of the rays of his transcendental body. Similarly, the Supersoul, which is called the Paramatma, is a plenary representation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Antaryami, the Supersoul in everyone's heart, is the controller of all living entities. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, wherein Lord Krishna says, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sani Vishtaha, I am situated in everyone's heart. The Bhagavad Gita 5:29 also states, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, indicating that the Supreme Lord, acting in his expansion as the Supersoul, is the proprietor of everything. Similarly, the Brahma Samhita 5:35 states, Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarastam, the Lord is present everywhere, within the heart of every living entity, and within each and every atom as well. Thus, by his Supersoul feature, the Lord is all-pervading. Furthermore, we see that the Brahman is the basis of everything, and so everything's sitting on that, and then he pervades everything like that. So one, you have the impersonal, that's the non-descript aspect. Furthermore, Lord Chaitanya is also the master of all wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge and renunciation, because he is Sri Krishna himself. He is described as Purna, or complete. In the feature of Lord Chaitanya, the Lord is an ideal renouncer, just as Sri Ram was an ideal king. Lord Chaitanya accepted the order of sannyas and exemplified exceedingly wonderful principles in his own life. No one can compare to him in the order of sannyas. Like even in South India, amongst everybody there, the Mayavadi, everybody, they consider him the greatest sannyasi. Although in Kali Yuga, acceptance of the sannyas order is generally forbidden, Lord Chaitanya accepted it because he is complete in renunciation. Others cannot imitate him, but can only follow in his footsteps as far as possible. Those who are unfit for this order of life are strictly forbidden by the injunctions of the Shastra to accept it. Lord Chaitanya, however, is complete in renunciation as well as all other opulences. He is therefore the highest principle of the absolute truth. By an analytical study of the truth, Lord Chaitanya, one will find that he is not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. No one is greater than or even equal to him. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:7, Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, Matav parataram nanyat kinchirasti dananjaya. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Thus, it is here confirmed that there is no truth higher than Lord Sri Chaitanya. The impersonal Brahman is the goal of those who cultivate the study of transcendental knowledge. And the Supersoul is the goal of those who perform the yoga practices. One who knows the Supreme Personality of Godhead surpasses realization of both Brahman and Paramatma, because Bhagavan is the ultimate platform of absolute knowledge. The Personality of Godhead is the complete form of Satchidananda, full life, knowledge, and bliss. By realization of the Sat portion of the complete whole, unlimited existence, one realizes the impersonal Brahman aspect of the Lord. By realization of the chit portion of the complete whole, unlimited knowledge, one can realize the localized aspect of the Lord, Paramatma. But neither of these partial realizations of the complete whole can help one realize ananda, or complete bliss, right? So even if you analyze those and have some understanding, it still won't, that won't help you in understanding the Supreme Lord. It's only through devotion, right? Without such realization of Ananda, knowledge of the Absolute is incomplete. This verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj is confirmed by a parallel statement in the Tattvasandarbha by Srila Jiva Goswami. In the eighth part of the Tattvasandarbha, it is said that the Absolute Truth is sometimes approached as impersonal Brahman, which, although spiritual, is only a partial representation of the Absolute Truth. Narayana, the predominating deity in Vaikuntha, is to be known as an expansion of Sri Krishna. But Sri Krishna is the supreme Absolute Truth, the object of all transcendental love of all living entities. Like, so you see here is that Narayana is an expansion of Sri Krishna, but he's the supreme Absolute Truth. He's the topmost. So understanding of Narayana, understanding of, you know, how he controls everything, Paramatma, because that's the whole idea of majesty, is that you know how he controls everything, how he's the lord of the energies, how he makes it all happen. So then these kind of aspects here then make for the intensity that they experience won't be as great as those who accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And within that, then those who accept him in his pastimes in Vrindavan, they'll taste the highest. Adi Lila 7106 translation. The Lord said, Vedanta philosophy consists of words spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, in the form of Vyasadeva. Purport. The Vedanta Sutra, which consists of aphorisms, revealing the method of understanding Vedic knowledge, is the concise form of all Vedic knowledge. It begins with the words, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time to inquire about the Absolute Truth. The human form of life is especially meant for this purpose, and therefore the Vedanta Sutra very concisely explains the human mission. This is confirmed by the words of the Vayu and Skanda Puranas, which define a sutra as follows. Alpaksharam asandignam sharavat vishvato mukam astobhyam anavadyam cha sutram sutra vido viduhu. A sutra is a compilation of aphorisms that expresses the essence of all knowledge in a minimum of words. It must be universally applicable and faultless in its linguistic presentation. Anyone familiar with such sutras must be aware of the Vedanta Sutra, which is well known among scholars by the following additional names. 1. Brahma Sutra. 2. Sharirika. 3. Vyasa Sutra. 4. Bhadarayana Sutra. 5. Uttara Mimamsa. And 6. Vedanta Darshana. So, it has to be always applicable. That means it's giving the principle, because the principle is always applicable. Detail sometimes is applicable, sometimes not. But the principle, that's always applicable. So that's the most important thing that's there. The essence of things is going to be what's always applicable. And then, of course, by proper training in that, you know how to apply that into your situation, and then it becomes always applicable. There are 4 chapters, adhyayas, in the Vedanta Sutra, and there are 4 divisions, padas, in each chapter. Therefore, the Vedanta Sutra may be referred to as Shodashapada, or 16 divisions of aphorisms. The theme of each and every division is fully described in terms of 5 different subject matters, adhikaranas, which are technically called pratigya, hetu, udaharna, upanaya, and nigamana. Every theme must necessarily be explained with reference to pratigya, or a solemn declaration of the purpose of the treatise. The solemn declaration given in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa, which indicates that the book was written with a solemn declaration to inquire about the Absolute Truth. Right? So that means all other than adhikaranas after that must be in line with that. They're establishing various aspects of that adhikarana. Similarly, reasons must be expressed. Hetu, right, means you've given a thesis, what's your reasons? Examples must be given in terms of various facts, udaharana. So you're giving these examples, and these examples then will apply to the various individuals in their various situations. So in Vedanta Sutra, it's giving the primary aspect, but it will be in line with the context of what each different school is thinking, you know, what kind of misunderstanding is there. Therefore, those examples are given. But the examples, they very nicely, explicitly say that. That's why you see these same similar kinds of examples are always used, because it's something that everybody can relate to. It has that universal nature. The theme must be gradually brought near for understanding, upanaya. So you defeat anything that's wrong, you point out that, and then you try to bring the whole thing together. So you're bringing all the points together. And finally, it must be supported by authoritative quotations from the Vedic Shastras, Nigamana. So that's another aspect of the fifth, is that it's not only it's the Siddhanta, but it gives the point of the authoritative quotations. It gives the Sanghati between the last sutra and this sutra and its connection to the next sutra, this pada to the previous one to the next one, this adhyaya to the previous one, the next one, Vedanta Sutra to the Upanishads, to the Bhagavad Gita, like this. The connections must be there. According to the great dictionary compiler, Hemachandra, also known as Koshakara, Vedanta refers to the purport of the Upanishads and the Brahmana portion of the Vedas. Professor Apte, in his dictionary, describes the Brahmana portion of the Vedas as that portion which states the rules for employment of hymns at various sacrifices and gives detailed explanations of their origin, sometimes with lengthy illustrations in the form of legends and stories. So even the Brahmanas will have all these things, but it's just trying to explain why the different, means how the different verses of the Veda itself is used within the various kinds of sacrifices. What's the background to that, how that works? Like, let's say we're saying Purusha Shukta, so the Purusha Shukta has to be chanted and all that. Then they'll give the background of the Purusha Shukta and that, and different stories that are there and all these different things like that. It is distinct from the mantra portion of the Vedas. Hemachandra says that the supplement of the Vedas is called the Vedanta Sutra. Veda means knowledge and anta means the end. In other words, proper understanding of the ultimate purport of the Vedas is called Vedanta knowledge. Such knowledge as given in the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra must be supported by the Upanishads. So that's why you see is when they're discussing the Vedanta Sutra is discussing the various points, then they're taking it back to the particular Upanishadic verses that the doubt might arise from. In studying the Upanishads, someone may misunderstand that or misinterpret something. You know, they don't use the direct meaning, they use some indirect, or they misunderstand a word, or they don't understand the grammar. So then those aspects then are brought out in the Vedanta Sutra. It talks about it directly connected with the Upanishads. And we see also that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in many of his works, he'll take the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya, the Dasa Mool, right? Because he says Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. He said in the last purport was that is the essence of the Vedic literature. That's what Vedanta is talking about. So then he'll give the evidence for all aspects of the 10 Dasa Mool of the Vedanta, of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana from the Upanishads. So he does that in quite a few literatures. So that's important. Plus, he also then shows from Gita, from Bhagavatam, from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he shows that completeness that's there. According to learned scholars, there are three different sources of knowledge, which are called prastantraya. According to these scholars, Vedanta is one of such sources, for it presents Vedic knowledge on the basis of logic and sound arguments. In the Bhagavad Gita 13.5, the Lord says, Brahma Sutra Parais Chaiva Hetu Madbhir Vinish Chitaihi. Understanding of the ultimate goal of life is ascertained in the Brahma Sutra by legitimate logic and argument concerning cause and effect. End quote. Therefore, the Vedanta Sutra is known as Nyaya Prashtan. Let me go this. Prashtantraya means the three sources of evidence. So this is Nyaya Prashtan. The Upanishads are known as Shruti Prashtan. And the Gita, Mahabharata, and Puranas are known as Smriti Prashtan. All scientific knowledge of transcendence must be supported by Shruti, Smriti, and a sound logical basis. So one might think, well, but why it says it, by a sound logical basis? Because by logic, you can't know the Lord. But the point is, who's presenting this logically? The devotee. So therefore, then that logical presentation, then it makes it clear, it goes through everything and just shows exactly how it works. But being empowered and viewed with the chit potency, therefore it has the effect of changing the heart of the listener. It is said that both the Vedic knowledge and the supplement of the Vedas, called the Sattvata Pancharatra, emanated from the breathing of Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedanta Sutra aphorisms were compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, a powerful incarnation of Sri Narayana. Although it's sometimes said that they were compiled by a great sage named Apantaratama. Never heard him. The Pancharatra and the Vedanta Sutra, however, express the same opinions. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore confirms that there's no difference in opinion between the two. And he declares that because the Vedanta Sutra was compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, it must be understood to have emanated from the breathing of Sri Narayana, because he is also the Lord, Narayana. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that while Vyasadeva was compiling the Vedanta Sutra, seven of his great saintly contemporaries were also engaged in similar work. These saints were Atreya Rishi, Asmaratya, Audalomi, Karshna Jini, Kasha, Kritsna, Jaimini, and Badari. In addition, it is stated that Parasari and Karamandi Bhikshu also discussed the Vedanta Sutra aphorisms before the Vyasadeva. Yeah, so this point of that it is giving the same conclusions as in the Pancharatra, because Pancharatra is called Ekayana, means it's just about the Supreme Lord. So if you're showing that, because everyone knows Pancharatra is about worshiping Vishnu. So that means the Vedanta Sutra is giving the same conclusion. It's about worshiping Vishnu. That's the whole point. As mentioned above, the Vedanta Sutra consists of four chapters. The first two chapters discuss the relationship of the living entity with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is known as Sambandha Gyan, or knowledge of the relationship. The third chapter describes how one can act in his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called Abhideya Jnana. The relationship of the living entity with the Supreme Lord is described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivar Surup Hoy Krishna Nityadas. The living entity is an eternal servant of Krishna, the Supreme God. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 20.108. Therefore, to act in that relationship, one must perform sadhana bhakti, or the prescribed duties of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called Abhideya Jnana. The fourth chapter describes the results of such devotional service, Prayojana Jnana, right? Because if you perform something, it produces something. Because we see is that the Kriya Shakti is what manifests everything. By the influence of the Icha Shakti, then we see that, you know, all the spiritual realm and all that is all manifest. So the name, form, qualities, pastimes of the Lord, all these things are all manifested through the Kriya Shakti by the influence of the Icha. By Krishna's desire, Kriya is manifesting. So we see Kriya is also in that position of Abhideya. So Abhideya means it's going to produce something. But what does it produce? It produces this love for Krishna. Right? So the ultimate goal, that's it. So that's the words anavriti shabdat and Vedanta Sutra indicate the ultimate goal. Srila Vyasadeva, a powerful incarnation of Narayana, compiled the Vedanta Sutra, and in order to protect it from unauthorized commentaries, he personally composed Srimad Bhagavatam on the instruction of his spiritual master, Narad Muni, as the original commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Besides the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra composed by all the major Vaishnava Acharyas. And in each of them, devotional service to the Lord is described very explicitly. Only those who follow Shankara's commentary have described the Vedanta Sutra in an impersonal way, without reference to Vishnu Bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord, or to the Lord, Vishnu. Generally, people very much appreciate this Sharirika Bhasya, or impersonal description of the Vedanta Sutra. But all commentaries that are devoid of devotional service to Lord Vishnu must be considered to differ in purport from the original Vedanta Sutra. In other words, Lord Chaitanya definitely confirmed that the commentaries of Bhasyas written by the Vaishnavacharyas on the basis of devotional service to Lord Vishnu and not the Sharirika Bhasya of Shankaracharya give the actual explanation of the Vedanta Sutra. Right? So it'll be appreciated because you can have the idea that I am the greatest. You can use, I am so intelligent. We see Sarvabhauma Bhattacharyas expressing to, the opinion that Lord Chaitanya should take, reinitiation and sannyas into a more, higher socially line. So we see is that all these things of good birth, their one's position in Varnashram, especially as a Brahmin, as a sannyasi, one's knowledge of grammar, one's logic, all these different things, the authority, all these things that make one unqualified for bhakti, right? Means if you identify with them and are proud of them, they make you unqualified for bhakti. But we see for Shankara, commentary, they make one very qualified, and people are the more elevated they are in that, the more they have this false ego. So that's why then they cannot understand bhakti, because they don't have the qualification. They're distracted by these elements that are useless for appreciating devotional service.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Yes, when we discuss about Sambandha, Bedeya, Prayojana, this aspect are always in every activity, no? In every relationship.
Yes,
in every material or spiritual is the same principle.
Yeah, same principle, because it's coming from Krishna. That's why I said the Vedanta Sutra, with understanding of cause and effect. Because that's the one unique thing that we put emphasis on is this aspect of cause and effect, right? It's specifically, you see, it's a Vaishnav thing. The Vaishnavs accept that, and we put a lot of emphasis on that. So, because all these things are coming from Krishna, you have Sat, you have Chit, and you have Ananda. These three aspects, then they have their specific transformations. So those transformations, you have the Ijha Kriya Jnana, you have Sandini Sambit Ladini, and you have the internal potency, external potency, and the Jiva. So these are various transformations of this Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So that's the source of everything. And from that also you get knowledge, activity, and bliss, right? So this Vastu Traya, this aspect, this is the basis of how everything is functioning. That's why the philosophy follows this, because it's all following how Krishna is Sat Chit Ananda and how that then expands as everything, there is. All tattva is expanding from these three things. Does that make sense? So
yes.
Others may or may not give so much importance to this, but, that doesn't matter. Lord Chaitanya does.
Yes.
And so as we saw in the last quote, he says that's how the Vedas work. That's what's going on. That was Lord Chaitanya's quote. That wasn't here. Where was that? We started there. The previous
yes.
one. Oh yes. So this is quoting from Lord Chaitanya himself in his explanation. He said, one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sambandha, activities in terms of that relationship, Abhideya, and the ultimate goal of life to develop love of God, Prayojana. These three subjects are explained in every aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra, for they form the culmination of the entire Vedanta philosophy. So, some people may appreciate that or not, but the reality is this is what Lord Chaitanya gave. That's what we follow. So in his Dasamu philosophy, it's simply taking Sambandha and giving, the different breakdowns of that. Then you have Abhideya and Prayojana. So it's still that Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Then in Bhagavatam, even the Abhideya and the Prayojana become more refined, rather than just position of developing love for Krishna or performing, engaging the senses in the Lord's service. Then they show us what's favorable, what's unfavorable, all these different aspects like that. And so then in that way, then in the Bhagavatam, you get even more breakdown. So you have 20 points to bring out Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So it's very much our philosophy. And Lord Chaitanya doesn't mention this once. He mentions it quite a few times in his different conversations with the different devotees. And so, yeah, so that's just, it's just how you look at things. And then the presentation has said, you know, the point of the Adhikaranas and those five points, there's a Srila Prabhupada quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that he mentions that, you know, cultured discussions are based on the structure of these five.
Yes.
Right? So you are presenting Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana according to Adhikarana. You know? Like that. Yes. You have your main point you're making, your reasons for it, your explanations with, you know, according to the facts and reasoning.
Yes.
Then you're going to bring it near so it's understandable to the person. And then you're going to conclude and show its connection with everything else. So that's just how it's done. That's what we discuss, and that's how we discuss it. That's the form.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
so, Maharaj, sense? So Maharaj, it is important for us to understand the process. To the process to understand the development of that presentation.
Yes, yes. But the message that's being given is the most important. So if in the beginning we don't fully understand about all these things, the technical points, but we can appreciate, you know, that service to Krishna and his position, and so we engage ourselves in service to Krishna, then we're getting the results of that endeavor. And with time, as we become purified, then these other technical points will become more and more clear. But the point is you can't have fault. You can't be proud that, oh, I've never heard of this, you know, or, you know, Prabhupada doesn't stress this very much. It means we don't know. Then we're not aware of what he's stressing.
Yes.
You know, does that make sense? You know, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, then. Okay, so that's that. Then Adi Lila 7108 translation. The absolute truth is described in the Upanishads and Brahma Sutra, but one must understand the verses as they are. That is the supreme glory in understanding, right? So you have to use the Abhida, Ashakti, not the Lakshana, right? Purport. It has become fashionable since the time of Shankaracharya to explain everything regarding the Shastras in an indirect way, because it gives them, you know, gives them that uniqueness, that flavor, how it's different. You know, everybody's talking Gita, so what can I do to make it so that my discussion on Gita is unique from everyone else? I stand out, and that way I have my name. Prabhupada was saying about so many different ones. He said that there's one translator in Bombay, one doctor, then he translated it that the Bhagavad Gita is actually the discussion between an Ayurvedic doctor and his patient, and it's all, you know, like that. So, you know, you just get all these things, you know. It's like, oh, Krishna means this, Arjuna means that, and the horses mean this, and, you know, all these different things, and they just come up with all this stuff. So that's what probably is being said. It's become fashionable since Shankaracharya, because, hey, I can make up my own philosophy also. Yeah, you know, why not? And so then we become very much, impressed with ourselves on how smart we are and how like that, and others, oh, yes. So that's the difficulty. Scholars take pride in explaining everything in their own way, and they declare that one can understand the Vedic scriptures in any way he likes. This any way you like method is foolish, and it has created havoc in the Vedic culture. One cannot accept scientific knowledge in his own whimsical way. So because you're dealing with the point of the emotions and the samskaras being connected to Krishna, then it's taken that, oh, so it's just a matter of feeling, and whatever I connect to and whatever I feel good about, then that's good enough. And this is creating so much havoc. And we see that if anybody takes this kind of modern approach and tries to present that, no, you know, we don't have to, it's Kali Yuga, we can interpret, you know, in a different way to match the modern society, it will only create trouble. And you see, because of this, then there's less and less potency and less results in the performance of the devotional activities. So one has to follow it as it is. That's why Prabhupada brings that out so much, as it is. This any way you like. I mean, he says, you know, you can do anything you like in the kitchen, go into the kitchen, throw anything you want in the pot and, you know, cook it or don't cook it, or, you know, burn it or don't burn it, or cook half of it, half of it you don't, or let's freeze half of it, let's overcook half of it, and let's burn part of it. And then we'll throw that all together by throwing it all up in the air. And when it hits the floor, then we'll get a shovel, scoop it up, and then we'll, you know, put it on in a pot. You know, that's just whatever I feel like. But if we hear someone's doing that in the kitchen, what's the first thought? The person's crazy. Right? So this idea, no, it's however I feel, that is philosophy for a crazy person. Yes, you as an individual can have feelings towards it and involved with it, but it's not about, our feeling is not the authority. In other words, the authority is already there, and if we follow it properly with that proper faith, then we will also, our feelings will be connected with it. That's the point. Body, mind, and words can connect. But the idea that our body, mind, and words are the authority. Oh, because of my body, I can do this service as I like. Or because of my senses, I can do like this. Or because of my mind, I can do like this. This is just all foolishness, following just in the footsteps of Shankaracharya. That's all. It's that simple. One cannot accept scientific knowledge in its own whimsical way. In the science of mathematics, for example, 2 + 2 = 4, and one cannot make it equal 3 or 5, or as some people nowadays, 2 + 2 = 22. Yet, although it is not possible to alter real knowledge, people have taken to the fashion of understanding Vedic knowledge in any way they like. Even though you can't do it, they do it, and then they want to call it that knowledge. So that's how it gets ruined. It is for this reason that we have presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. Notice, as it is in capital, as is in capital, it is in capital. Important. We're not just saying, yeah, Bhagavad Gita, how it's there. No, as it is. That's the important thing. And if we're not accepting the Bhagavad Gita as it is, then we're, you know, as it ain't. So therefore, making our own translations, our own things, what's the point? Like that, it's not going to get you anything. Because, yeah, you can write anything you like. Hey, it's a free world. But it's also, you're free to stay in this free world. You want to go back to Godhead as it is, right? We do not create meanings by concoction. Sometimes commentators say that the word Kurukshetra in the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita refers to one's body, but we do not accept this. We understand that Kurukshetra is a place that still exists, and according to the Vedic version, it is Dharmakshetra, or a place of pilgrimage. People still go there to perform Vedic sacrifices. Foolish commentators, however, say that Kurukshetra means the body, and that the Panchapandavas refers to the 5 senses. Like this, they just find something connects, and oh, wow, oh, that's this, oh, and for them, they're just having great fun. And then they go out and they talk, they tell other people, and other people go, oh, wow, that's far out, because they don't think about it. And then everybody thinks, oh, that was really nice, that was great, it was enlightening and all that. But all it did was, it was some interesting connections between something, you know. And so it has nothing to do with the absolute truth. And so no one advances. In this way, they distort the meaning and people are misled. Here, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirms that all Vedic literatures, including the Upanishads, Brahma Sutra, and others, whether Shruti, Smriti, or Nyaya, right? The Nyaya, I mean the Prastantraya, right? must be understood according to their original statements. To describe the direct meaning of the Vedic literature is glorious, but to describe them in one's own way, using imperfect senses and imperfect knowledge, is a disastrous blunder. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fully deprecated the attempt to describe the Vedas in this way. So that's why we follow what the Acharyas say. So even we have the Vedic verses, because we have imperfect senses and tend to make mistakes and cheating and all these things. Therefore, our interpretation doesn't matter. It's what do the Acharyas say? We follow that. Because as we see, Jiva Goswami points out that sometimes according to the grammatical rules, we may be thinking it's one grammatical rule, but it's actually another grammatical rule. You know, it's just like, I think, I'm not sure. I think it was Ramanujacharya's guru was talking about, how you say, he had made this statement about the I think, Kapidvaja.
Yes, like Maharaj, it's Ramanujacharya's guru, Yadava Prakash.
Yeah, Yadava Prakash. So he had made the point in comparing, because you can then say grammatically that it means red like the backside of a monkey, right? Because certain monkeys, their backside is quite red. You know, it's a particular kind of red. So you want to say, so that's how he's interpreting it. And Ramanujacharya is not very satisfied. So then he asks him, so if you don't think it's this, then let's see, okay, smarty pants, you know, how would you interpret it? You know, how would you explain it? And so he explains it very nicely. And because of that, then from that day forward, there was a bit of a problem between the two. So that's the whole thing, is you know what it actually is. And therefore they see, you know, out of, let's say, in this case, three or four different grammatical rules apply, they know which one it is. But otherwise we, by our thing, we'll just choose whichever one is obvious to us or whichever one we like, you know? So, yeah. So that's the problem. That's why we have to follow the Acharyas, because it has to be as it is. We don't know what as it is, so we follow the Acharyas. And we can see by looking at the Gita verses, then what is being explained in the purport, that's the actual as it is. Regarding the Upanishads, the following 11 Upanishads are considered to be the topmost: Isha, Kena, Kata, Krishna, Mundaka, Mandukya, Taittiriya, Aitreya, Chandogya, Brihad Aranyaka, and Svetasvatara. However, in the Mukti Upanishad, verses 30 through 39, there is a description of 108 Upanishads. Thus, there are 108 generally accepted Upanishads, of which 11 are the most important, as previously stated. Right? So then, you know, some like Shankaracharya, they only accept, they don't even, 11, they only accept 10. So I'm not sure which one of these they drop off. And then, but there's 108. Of these, then these 11 are prominent. And of that, Isha is the head. Right? All of them are saying that they're giving the main points. But it should be seen in the context of the Isha Upanishad. That's why Prabhupada's translated Isha. And then with that, then you have the knowledge of what is there in the other Upanishads. And any other Upanishad you should see in that context. Right? And since, yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in his teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 24. Lord Chaitanya protested against misinterpretations of the Upanishads. And he rejected any explanation which did not give the direct meaning of the Upanishads. The direct interpretation is called Abhida Vritti, whereas the indirect interpretation is called Lakshana Vritti. The indirect interpretation serves no purpose. There are four kinds of understanding, called 1, direct understanding, Pratyaksha; 2, hypothetical understanding, Anuman; 3, historical understanding, Aitihya; and 4, understanding through sound, shabda. Of these 4, understanding from the Vedic scriptures, which are the sound representations of the absolute truth, is the best method. The traditional Vedic students accept understanding through sound to be the best, right? So you take this sound, and then from understanding from the histories and all that, then you're going to hypothetically try to apply it into your situation until you're able to apply it, and then you can directly see what the Shabda was saying, right? So it descends in that way. It doesn't start with the senses, Pratyaksha. It ends with the senses. Then you know you have understood it and you're able to apply it, abhideya, because now you're able to engage the senses in applying that principle. Right? But that's why also then the aitihya is important, in that we see, well, what's the history, what's the tradition of doing this? And that does have meaning, you know, because they'll say, well, in the tradition in ISKCON, but, you know, some... Where is okay? We just even take a simple one. How Prabhupada cooked back in the 60s and 70s, where is that now? Who's doing it? So that is our tradition. Who's using it? Right? You know, how the devotees dressed in the 60s and 70s, are we using that? Some are, some aren't. And so basically what it means is, however myself and my friends, whatever we feel like doing, and we do it for a while and get away with it, and we come into positions of authority, so then we even influence others to follow it, that becomes ISKCON tradition. No, it's what is the tradition? How has it been followed by the acharyas? How it's being done? Then you see, then other things, you know, in that context of the mood and all that, of how Srila Prabhupada gave, what did he do, what did the others do, what are their comments, and then you can expand. But yeah, so direct is important. So on the direct meaning, then you see what is the history. Then you apply it, contemplate, well, like this or like that, until you're able to make it work. Right? 2.6, 134 to 135. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. For each sutra, the direct meaning must be accepted without interpretation. However, you simply abandon the direct meaning and proceed with your imaginative interpretation. Although there is other evidence, the evidence given in the Vedic version must be taken as foremost. Vedic versions understood directly are first-class evidence, right? So you might take it from other places, but it has to be the Vedic is the first. Based on that, then you can proceed. Srila Prabhupada. Works that should be consulted are Srila Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha, 10 through 11, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary on that, and the following verses of the Brahma Sutra, Shastra Yonitvat, Vedanta Sutra 113, Tarka Pratishthanat 2.1.11, and Shrutestu Shabda Mulatvat 2.1.27, as commented upon by Sri Ramanujacharya, Sri Madhvacharya, Sri Nimbarkacharya, and Sri Baladeva Vidyabhushana. In his work, Sarva Samvadini, Srila Jiva Goswami has noted that although there are 10 kinds of evidence, direct perception, the Vedic version, historical reference, hypothesis, and so on, and although they are all generally accepted as evidence, a person presenting a hypothesis, reading the Vedic version, perceiving, or interpreting by his experience is certain to be imperfect in four ways. That is, he is subject to commit mistakes, right? Because he's interpreting by his own experience. So he's taking the Vedic version and then interpreting by his own experience. There'll be a problem. So unless it's based on that is, he is subject to committing mistakes, to becoming illusioned, to cheating, and to having imperfect senses. Although the evidence may be correct, the person himself is in danger of being misled due to his material defects. So it may be correct, but then he follows because of his defects, he can get off and end up, you know, in another place, starting in the same position. Apart from the direct presentation, there's a chance that an interpretation may not be perfect. Therefore, the conclusion is that only a direct presentation can be considered evidence. An interpretation cannot be accepted as evidence, but may be considered proof of evidence, right? So the indirect, you can use it to show the evidence, the direct evidence, but it wouldn't be the evidence itself. You know, like you say that, and then you can give an example and all that. That's how, that's the third section of the Adhikarana, is that you're giving according to, you know, logic and facts, you're giving examples. And so those examples may themselves not necessarily be perfect, but they bring out an understanding of the direct meaning. But you wouldn't use them as evidence like that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 23, Knowledge is information gathered from the scriptures. And science is practical realization of that knowledge. Knowledge is scientific when it's gathered from the scriptures through the bona fide spiritual master. But when it's interpreted by speculation, it is mental concoction. By scientifically understanding the scriptural information through the bona fide spiritual master, one learns by one's own realization the actual situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is different from material manifestations, and it is above the reactions of matter. Unless one scientifically understands the spiritual form of the Personality of Godhead, one becomes an impersonalist. Right? So the spiritual form, you have to, that's what makes the difference. You accept the spiritual form of the Lord. That's then what makes things very, very proper. If you do that, then you're connected with devotional service properly. But if not, then one can get distracted because one's not thinking about the form of the Lord. That's the transcendental form. That's why we focus more on that rather than just the qualities and all these things on their own. See, Krishna has all these good qualities, but if we just take the quality alone without his connection to Krishna and his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, then we can get distracted by applying it simply as social, political, you know, economic kind of purpose.
261. Yes. Yeah. When we speak about to understand scientifically, so in our way, when we speak about science, we speak about logic, about something we can experience. So is it the same meaning in the Veda about science?
It says here, and science is practical realization of knowledge. Knowledge is scientific when it's gathered from scriptures through the bona fide spiritual master. That's what makes it science, because science means I am contemplating it, I am applying it. That's science. Not science is not how I'm gaining the knowledge. It's the application makes it science. Otherwise, it's just speculation. It means modern, they've coined the term science. But that's just to make themselves feel good. They're looking at something and then speculating about it. I mean, it's just like I've seen sometimes, you know, areas. Wow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. There must be one more. Two groups of seven sisters. And they're all sitting all in one place. Okay, so, you know, seven sisters, no? Okay. One kind of bird makes a lot of noise. So, They're looking at things through the senses, and sometimes they come up with completely wrong ideas. I mean, just as anyone who's gone to school and had to study science in school, you're always reading in the book, before we thought like this, now we know. It's like every book is saying that. Yes. So that means everything that you're learning now, that the next generation is going, before we thought like this, now we know. So whatever you learned in science in school is absolutely bogus now. They think it's something else, but they want to call it science. They want to have that thing that I'm perfect at all times, even though whatever I'm doing is completely bogus. I'm so fabulous. It's just false ego. So therefore the Vedic concept of science is you've heard the philosophy in that. Now you're applying that practically. That's called science, but it's based on hearing from the spiritual master coming in parampara and understanding it with a direct meaning. That's science. We make our own interpretation, and that's not science. Yes.
It is like a manana. Can we say that it is like the process of manana?
Yes. And that brings us to realization, and then when we're practicing from there, then that would be what we then that's what we would call science. So means the process is the scientific process, but we're going to say manana, that we're practicing it, that's going to be the scientific application. And when we come to realization, so now we're practicing based on that realization that we've got through the understanding shastra, that's going to be proper science. That's science. All this attachment to this modern academic method, because everybody can sit around and think that they're so special and that, then that's all useless. You're not going to get back to Godhead with that mentality. You can't. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in other words, science, it's an original thing, but it's being misapplied nowadays, because nowadays you can be a theoretical scientist and never apply anything. And then, but they're still, and they consider themselves the highest scientists, when actually they're getting farther and farther away from science. What to do?
Maharaj?
Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Also there is a point that the axioms in any field, like in science or mathematics, there are axioms which are universally accepted, and they try to prove that. Like for us, the axioms or in philosophy, the axioms of what is given in the Vedas, that Krishna is the absolute truth. Now for the modern scientists, still they follow Darwin as their axiom, because though they say it's not him, but they ultimately try to prove what he says, whether it's in the field of biology or any other fields. So the axiom is like the information. We have to understand the information presented. So the information is already set. It's not we try to make it up. We only need to understand it.
Yeah, so for them, they'll call that the deductive method, that they're hearing from, you know, the previous scientists, and in that way, then they're developing. But the problem is those previous sciences, it's an inductive knowledge. So you're only deductively learning inductive knowledge. So it doesn't make it deductive knowledge. It's just using a deductive method to learn inductive knowledge. So that's the point, is that it has to be deductive knowledge applied. And then that becomes real science. Otherwise, as Prabhupada says, all this other stuff is just arts. You know, like that. That's all. You know, I'm sure that you could take, you know, some simple little thing. I don't know. Do you have, just what comes to mind is hopscotch. Do you have that thing here? You have that here? Never heard of that?
No, I didn't hear. I never heard about it.
That it's a thing. I don't know if you have, but in the West they have, generally it's the younger girls who will get into it. They'll draw these squares on the ground, and you do three single hops on one leg, and then you do a hop on two legs, then one leg,
okay,
then two legs, then one leg.
Yes, Maharaj, everybody plays here that.
Okay, what do you call it?
We call it in a local language.
Okay, yeah. You have Devarshi, you have there in France and all that, and. Yes. Okay. So everybody has it. Now, if you take that and go that, you know, by the space it has to be, the rhythm that you have to use, and all these different kinds of things, you know, how much trajectory is there? What's the angle that's going for them to land in the middle of the square? You know, so therefore they could probably come out with this huge thing about the pressure that's going there, and then, you know, which muscles, and then which angles, and all these different things. And you could make this huge, you could probably have a huge manual on how to hopscotch according to nuclear physics, you know, but that doesn't make it science. It's still an art, because all they're looking at is just art. They just analyze it so much, they call themselves scientists, you know? Does that make sense? That's all. Or sit there and analyze musically, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb or something, you know? And then they call themselves scientists because of that, you know? But they're actually just artists that like to, you know, speculate intellectually on their art. So that's the difficulty. Okay, where are we? Okay. Knowledge is scientific when it is gathered from scriptures through the bona fide spiritual master. But when it is interpreted by speculation, it is mental concoction. By scientifically understanding the scriptural information through the bona fide spiritual master, one learns by one's own realization the actual situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is different from material manifestations, and it is above the reactions of matter. Unless one scientifically understands the spiritual form of the personality of Godhead, one becomes an impersonalist. Like before it says one may, now he's saying one becomes. So one has to be very, very careful. You know, you want to be very careful about this. 26136. That's why the emphasis is always on Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes, these aspects, and putting so much emphasis here. And we'll think, oh, well, why emphasizing there? You know, because then what's the alternative? Just how he pervades everything, he controls everything. That's the other. You know, so that we don't have to think about his body for that. 26136. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, conch shells and cow dung are nothing but the bones and the stool of some living entities. But according to the Vedic version, they are both considered very pure. Srila Prabhupada, according to Vedic principles, bones and dung are considered very impure. If one touches a bone or stool, he must take a bath immediately. That is the Vedic injunction. Yet the Vedas also enjoin that a conch shell, although the bone of an animal, and cow dung, although the stool of an animal, are very much sanctified. Even though such statements appear contradictory, on the basis of the Vedic version, we still accept the fact that conch shells and cow dung are pure and sanctified. Srila Prabhupada writes in his teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 24. Apparently, these statements are contradictory, but because cow dung and conch shells are considered pure by the Vedas, they are accepted as pure by the followers of the Vedas. If we want to understand the statements by indirect interpretation, then we have to challenge the Vedic statements. In other words, Vedic statements cannot be accepted by our imperfect interpretations. They must be accepted as they are. If they are not accepted in this way, there is no authority in the Vedic statements, right? So Shankaracharya is to get his interpretations, and because the direct meaning is so obvious about personalism, then he'll make the statement that Vyasadeva is mistaken. And therefore they should be understood like this. But if Vyasadeva is mistaken, what's the whole point or use of his Vedanta Sutra? Why are they studying it anyway? Right? If he's mistaken, why would they spend their whole life studying the work of someone who's mistaken and have to give a new interpretation? You know, so that's the difficulty with these things. So we have to take it that, no, it's not wrong. You have to accept the statements. There may be the time, place, and circumstance to how to apply it. That's why then we have the history and how did the acharyas, how did they, in these situations, how did they apply everything? And so then we see the tradition, and then we try to make it work for us. 26137. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the Vedic statements are self-evident. Whatever is stated there must be accepted. If we interpret according to our own imagination, the authority of the Vedas is immediately lost. Srila Prabhupada. Out of four main types of evidence, direct perception, hypothesis, historical reference, and the Vedas, Vedic evidence is accepted as the foremost. We want to interpret the Vedic version, we must imagine an interpretation according to what we want to do. First of all, we set forth such an imagination as suggestion or hypothesis. As such, it is not actually true, and the self-evident proof is lost, right? So even when you look at it, Prabhupada's analyzing this here, is that you have the Veda, you take that, you apply that. Right, you've already tested that it's correct, and now that you've accepted it's correct, now you apply it. You don't have to test it each time. You can if you want, but there's no need. But if you want to interpret it, then you have to imagine according to what we want to do. I want to accomplish something. Therefore, I'm going to interpret it that way. But then that means the authority of the statement is lost, because the statement is supposed to be telling us what to do, not we're using what we want to do and using the statement to prove it. So that's the point, is that in the in Shankara's interpretation, it's just proving what he wants to establish. It's not showing the evidence of the Vedas. So that's very, very important. We have to take it from here, because people have an agenda, what they want to accomplish. Therefore, then they want to give an interpretation on what is being mentioned in the scriptures, because they have something that they want to obtain. Okay, so then, so we've come to the end of today's discussion, and we'll continue tomorrow. I hope. Thank you, everybody. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.